This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Dan Olmsted is a senior editor with UPI, and he joins us on the long line from his office in Washington. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Coy.
How you doing? Happy New Year to you.
Thanks very much. I don't think it's quite as warm here, but it's pretty nice out.
How were the holidays for you and your family? Everything went
good.
Well?
Good, yeah, quiet. I'd been kind of traveling a lot last year, a lot of it on my autism research, and so I was home, and that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I bet that was a nice change. I know you are on the road quite a bit. Dan, let's start at the very beginning, and the best place to start is just to familiarize folks with this story and how you were introduced to it and how you started working on it. I was telling folks in the last hour that you are one of the top investigative journalists that have been covering the autism epidemic. You've broken a number of stories about the relationship between mercury poisoning, vaccines, and autism. So start at the beginning for us and tell us how this story first came across your desk.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I, just about 2 years ago, wrote my first column, The Age of Autism, and I've been writing it more or less every week since then, sometimes a little bit more. And the reason that I got started was because I had previously been working on stories about an anti-malaria drug, which has nothing to do with autism or vaccines or anything else. It's a pill. But a lot of travelers talked about how they felt it had caused them very serious psychiatric problems, and some of them became suicidal, and some of them, unfortunately, killed themselves. And my reporting partner, Mark Benjamin, and I wrote about that, and in doing so, began looking at why the CDC would recommend a drug that had these kind of problems without pointing out the risks. And that led, just by a sort of natural progression, to the issue of a lot of parents felt that some childhood vaccinations and some components in those vaccines might be causing regressive autism. And so I began to look into that more and more, and I became convinced that it was an open question, let's put it that way, that deserved more coverage along with just whatever else might be under review as a possible reason that we've had such an increase in the number of autism cases over the past couple of decades. So that really is it, and I've just kind of been at it ever since.
And you say you started out as saying, you know, here's a story that really needs, a good reporter needs to look into this story. Somebody should write about this. And fast forward years later, where is your thinking now? All the things that you've learned, and we'll talk about some of those things, but all of the things that you have learned and you've studied and the people you've talked with, the evidence you've looked at, the cover-up that you have discovered, where is your thinking now?
Well, you know, there are some other reporters who've done great work on this, including David Kirby, who wrote the wonderful book Evidence of Harm, which really laid all this out a couple of years ago. I sort of picked up the trail, and in looking at and talking to many parents and some researchers and going back and looking at the history of this disorder, which I felt had not really been done, I really feel that there's strong indications that mercury in vaccines and possibly other forms is implicated in autism. Let's put it that way. That doesn't mean that it has caused every case. It doesn't mean that every vaccine is an issue here because some of them don't have mercury. But also there may be other causes, like vaccines in general, maybe overloading our kids at too early an age with too strong a combination of toxic particles. I don't know. But I will say that I am increasingly convinced that mercury belongs right in the center of this discussion until it's proven otherwise.
Dan Olmsted is our guest, senior editor at UPI. Let's get right to your most recent installment in your Age of Autism column, and it was titled Problems in CDC Data. Why don't you tell us that story?
Okay. Well, you know, when you go to your pediatrician ask about the safety of vaccines, and you're assured that there's no risk of autism, and that's been disproven, what your doctor is relying on, and properly so, are a number of studies that have the backing of the CDC and the Institute of Medicine and that kind of important public health stamp on it. But what happened was Congress recently asked for an independent panel of experts to take a look at the CDC data that was behind probably the most important study that found no connection between vaccine mercury and autism. And what the panel concluded, which was, I think, startling, was that the data the CDC relied on to come to this conclusion that there was no connection was simply too weak. It had problems in terms of comparing, different kids from different HMOs. It couldn't account for whether kids had left certain HMOs and gone to other places, so they just really couldn't use that data the way they did to assure everybody that there's no risk of autism from vaccines. And that's a big deal, because if those studies are undercut, then we don't really have much to go on that disproves a connection, and that's troubling, I think.
And this is the studies that, folks have been going into their pediatricians for years and saying, I hear something out there about mercury vaccines and autism. What's that all about? And the doctor looks them right in the eyes and says, there's nothing to worry about. The CDC studied that. There's no link.
Right. The CDC study and some other studies, all of them from other countries, interestingly enough. But when I spoke to the chairwoman of this expert panel, who was a professor at the University of California and was picked by the National Institutes of Health, she told me that the rest of those studies were even less reliable and had bigger problems. And her exact quote to me was, it's an open question whether anything about vaccines, including preservatives or timing or dose, is related to autism, and that's a big deal.
So if somebody goes to a pediatrician tomorrow and the pediatrician says, look, the CDC, the NIH, Institute of Medicine, they all studied that years ago, and they determined that there's no link. As of a few weeks ago in December, when this panel went back and studied that evidence, that pediatrician is misinformed, let's say.
I think they haven't seen the latest twist in this discussion, and I think that they might want to look at that before they say that the next time. Yes.
Right, right.
Yes, I do.
Dan, tell us, what do you think is going to happen as a result of this? Because this is explosive. This really is explosive news that the studies the CDC has been relying on to say there's no evidence to support a link between autism and vaccines and mercury poisoning, it's just blown out of the water.
Well, I think as little as possible is going to happen if the public health authorities can get away with it, because after all, the mercury preservative, which is called thimerosal, was phased out of most of these pediatric vaccines starting in 1999. It's still in flu shots, but I think one trigger might be if the Institute of Medicine, which is one of the major organizations that concluded that there was no evidence of this problem between mercury and autism, if they decided to take another look, that could really cause a sensation. And a lot of people have been pushing them to do exactly that. They raised questions right away about that Institute report in 2004 that was basically paid for by the CDC and cited the CDC study that's now in question. So, there's political pressure, people pressure could start another push to look at this. And I think that's probably a good idea.
And, of course, Congress studied this issue a few years ago, and they issued a report. Of course, it was buried in a Saturday press release. But tell us about what happened with that, when that was, and what was the finding there.
Right. Well, I think it was the year 2000, but it may have begun a little bit earlier. But Representative Dan Burton, a Republican of Indiana, was chairman of the House Reform Committee. And his grandchild developed autism immediately after getting a series of vaccinations, and I think maybe the age of one or one and a half. And he became convinced that there was a connection, and he held some hearings that brought a lot of this material out into the light of day, and then a report was issued by that committee that basically said the FDA was asleep at the switch when they kept increasing the amount of mercury that kids were getting through these vaccines in the last couple of decades, and that they needed to get a grip on this right away. It was kind of dismissed. I mean, Dan Burton is a bit of a character, and I think, it was easy to say, well, he's the guy that, put a pumpkin in his backyard and fired a rifle at it to see if Vince Foster had been murdered in the Clinton administration. And he used every possible way to denigrate this report was trotted out. But I think it was a pretty compelling piece of work. Some of the people who were involved in that, I think, are very sharp. And, it just kind of faded away. It's online. People should read it. People should decide for themselves what they think.
UPI reporter Dan Olmsted is our guest on Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. Speaking of Congress, Dan, a couple of weeks ago we spoke with Laura Bono, one of the co-founders of the National Autism Association, speaking to us about the Combating Autism Bill, which has just passed finally. Update us about that.
Well, I think there's some mixed feeling in the sort of autism activist world about that bill. Fundamentally, it provides, I think, about $1 billion to do new research on autism and to look for treatments and that sort of thing. So it's certainly a net plus. The debate was over the question of whether it should specifically order that research be done into vaccines as a possible cause of autism, and I think that language was taken out. However, the bill does require that money be spent to look into so-called environmental causes, which would include vaccines. And the House sponsor of that bill, Joe Barton, made some pretty strong statements about why that should be done that I think are going to lead to some newer studies.
We're talking with Dan Olmsted. He's one of the nation's leading investigative reporters who's been studying the autism epidemic for a number of years. The phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you have a question or a comment about this story. Dan, go back with us in time and sort of march us through some of your work and perhaps some of the major stories that you've broken related to the autism epidemic and some of the major findings that you've come across in your work.
I think there's probably been three main areas that I've looked at. One is the early history since it was first diagnosed in the 1930s. Another is whether the autism rate is lower in communities like the Amish that have much lower vaccination rates. And the third is I did some reporting out in Washington State last year about whether kids who got their MMR, mumps, measles, rubella, combined vaccine, along with their chickenpox shot, all in the same day, at a very early age, were more susceptible to developing regressive autism. So those are the three things that I think I've maybe, you know, broken some new territory on.
And I want to explore some of that with you. Before we do, though, just for some of the folks who might be listening who aren't familiar with this, regressive autism, when we use that phrase, we're talking about a child who's been developing, typically hitting all the milestones. They go in for vaccines, and quite often there's some type of help me out, Dan. They completely regress.
Yeah, well, a lot of times what you see is a physical reaction within a week or two to a vaccination. Just, you know, anything from swelling the size of, you know, a parent's fist to, violent physical illness that's like the flu, and then an onset within 2 or 3 months where the parent begins to think, you know, I think Johnny was saying several words that I haven't heard him say in a while. I wonder what the deal is. And then they realize that the child isn't making eye contact and that sort of thing. Now, in fairness, we should say that observation has been disputed by health authorities who say, well, autism includes a regressive form, and it occurs in the first 3 years of life by definition, and you kids get vaccinated, and we understand why parents would make this connection, but it really doesn't exist. So I would only say that I've talked to many, many very intelligent parents, and I mean, in this country, we're very centered on families and the parents knowing their children, and if that's the case, a lot of parents think that these kids had vaccine reactions.
Yeah, well, there's a story here in Charlottesville. I won't give you the name or even the gender of the child, but there is a child here in Charlottesville who I know of who the child was actually reading at a young age, and this child had developed typically in every way, and went in for some vaccines and is now on the autism spectrum, and it's a very, very different child than this child was before vaccines. And I know in our case, in our family, my son, I'll never forget the day I turned to my wife and I said, you know what? He doesn't play anymore. He stopped playing. He stopped looking at us. What happened? And she thought it was a phase and it only got worse. And we traced that back to a time period shortly following some vaccines. A story that you've heard dozens of times all over the country.
And I think when this story completely unfolds, the biggest scandal of all is not going to be in some government agency. The biggest scandal is going to be that doctors did not listen to parents when they told them what happened to their kids. I think that's just an outrage.
Dan Olmstead is our guest, UPI senior editor, one of the nation's leading investigative journalists studying the autism epidemic. We're going to take a very quick break for some local news and weather and continue this discussion on the other side of this break. Phone lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation at 977-1070. This is Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Dan Olmstead is a senior editor at UPI. He's been writing about the autism epidemic for a number of years, one of the nation's top investigative journalists. He's broken numerous stories about autism. Dan, we want to continue this conversation. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Jordan is on the line. Jordan, you're on with Dan Olmstead. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. A couple of things. One, I know of a kid who has no vaccines whatsoever. He's 17 years old. The other thing is there a distinction or difference between live vaccines and dead vaccines? And I think that's pretty much what I need to know. I'll hang up and let you answer. Thanks.
Jordan, one question real quick. Are you still with us?
Yes, still with you.
The 17-year-old, you know, has autism, is on the spectrum, or is not?
No, he seems fine.
Okay.
Teenage son, you know.
Great. Thank you so much for two great questions. Dan, go ahead.
I guess I'm a little uncertain about the 17-year-old. I mean, if he was not vaccinated and doesn't have autism, do you understand that?
I guess he's saying is, do we need these vaccines?
you know, that's not my department, Coy. I think that there can be an argument about whether some of the vaccinations that have been added in recent years are as important as we hear. I mean, chickenpox, for example. The argument there is that if there are some small percentage of cases that go on to develop serious problems, and also that, you know, if a parent has to stay home with a kid with chickenpox, it takes away from our economic productivity. I'm not sure that's a good enough argument if there's any risk at all from you know, piling on too many vaccinations. The other issue, I think, is also important because live vaccines do have particles in them that can interact with the immune system in a much different way than ones that are inactivated. Also, the live vaccines tend not to have the mercury component in them because mercury would kill the live virus. The main live virus vaccine is the MMR, and the chickenpox is another one. And you hear a lot of stories from parents about regression after the MMR. And as I said, when I was out in Washington State, I felt, after talking to a lot of parents, that there was a risk if you got the MMR and the chickenpox vaccines all on the same day at an early age. So there is a difference.
We were talking earlier in the last half hour, and of course, folks, phone lines are still open at 977-1070. In the last half hour, you mentioned some of your work among communities that have not been vaccinated, which you broke the story that these communities, the Amish, for example, have very, very low, if at all, rates of autism.
Well, yes. I mean, and I have been careful to say, especially with the Amish, that they are a very hard community to get into and that their standards for taking someone to see a medical professional are different. But the truth is that, you know, I talked to doctors who treated them, and I talked to parents, you know, who were at least on the edges of the autism Amish community, and they just said there was really virtually none. And then I came on to something that I thought was even more significant, which is a medical practice in Chicago called Home First. And they started out as a natural home birth practice, and they sort of naturally attracted a lot of parents who didn't want to vaccinate their kids. And they had 10 or 15 or 20,000 kids they've been tracking over the last couple of decades. And the doctor who runs that practice said they didn't have any autism. And he looked in his records, and, you know, he was part of an HMO that would detect these things, and it looks to be the case. And as we know, the rate of autism in the general population is something like 1 in 166. So to have, like, 0 in 10,000 gets your attention, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Steve is on the line. Steve, you're on with Dan Olmstead. Go right ahead.
Hey, how are y'all today?
Very good. Thanks for the call.
And something you might not think about is I just got my children flu shots. I have a 4-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they're fine. But the flu shots have mercury in them, too. And I requested mercury free ones, and she goes, oh, well, excuse me, I'll need to go and get you the other vaccine. So when you get your kids flu shots, you have to ask for that.
Absolutely. It's a great point, and congratulations to you. I'm very impressed, and I congratulate you on doing that. I encourage everybody, because I get asked quite frequently, and Dan, I'm sure you do as well, you know, are you against vaccines? And I am not, as a matter of course, but I encourage people when they go to their pediatricians to ask for mercury-free, preservative-free shots. And folks should know that the flu shots, each of those shots has 25 micrograms of ethyl mercury, which is hundreds of times more dangerous than lead. It is a poison, and it is in every flu shot.
Well, it's in at least quite a number of them. I think there are some that don't have it, as Steve was saying, and he was able to get that, but I think that supply is pretty limited. The other thing is the CDC recommends flu shots not only for these, you know, kids as young as 6 months of age, but for pregnant women. And they've increased that recommendation, you know, from the first trimester now to the entire period of pregnancy. And I just have to say, I think it is inexplicable and inexcusable that at a time when we are so concerned about toxins in kids' bodies, that the CDC has not found a way to get mercury out of all flu shots that might be given to women who are pregnant or to kids. It just, you know, we're not talking about sugar water here. We're talking about mercury, which is incredibly toxic. And, you know, if you want to say one kind is more toxic than another, fine. But, I mean, what if we said we had plutonium in flu shots? And, you know, then the CDC said, well, you know, plutonium is different kinds of plutonium. It's not very much plutonium. And people would stand up and go, get plutonium out of flu shots. But it's mercury, and somehow we have the public health officials and the pediatricians in this country saying, oh, just a little mercury is not going to hurt your infant in the womb there. I just don't get it.
Dan Olmstead, senior editor at UPI. The phone number here is 977-1070. Dan, tell us what you have learned in studying the autism epidemic about treatment. Bernard Remlin recently passed away. You can tell folks who might not know who he is and why he's so important in America, in the world, when it comes to combating autism, and perhaps some things you've learned about what's going on with the treatment of autism.
Well, you know, I think the mainstream medical opinion on autism is that it is usually a lifetime disability, and that there are some early interventions with behavioral techniques that can help a lot and sometimes can help completely. And I think that that's true. But there has been a growing movement in this country that I know I think you're part of, where some parents and researchers believe that there are medical treatments, because autism is a medical condition triggered by toxic poisons in interacting with a genetic susceptibility. And Bernard Rimland was a leader of the Autism Research Institute, and he created a network of doctors called the DAN Doctors for Defeat Autism Now. And they began using a number of different techniques, from methyl B12 injections to a very controversial process called chelation, which is an attempt to, you know, draw the mercury and other toxins out of the body. It's been used for decades with lead poisoning, and they've tried it with mercury. And this is very controversial. I certainly am not in a position to recommend it, but again, I have talked to lots and lots of folks who feel that the only time they started to see any progress with their kid was with that kind of treatment, and also with diet. And the diet has to do with withholding basically wheat and milk proteins that could possibly be aggravating the situation.
Dan, what do you think we're looking at as you look out towards to 2007? We're in a new year now. We've got the Combating Autism Bill. We've got this report showing that the CDC data is fraught with problems and challenges that do not support their previous conclusions, and that pediatricians have to be re-informed and re-educated about autism. So there's a lot of good things happening. What do you see happening as you look out at 2007 and the work that you are that you continue to do into this story? What do you see happening?
Well, you know, I wrote a sort of a year-end piece. I gave out some awards that, in my humble opinion, people deserved. And I said, I ended up by saying, I think that 2007 is going to be a very good year for the truth. And by that I mean that there is really an increasing awareness that autism really has exploded, that it's not just some function of better diagnosis, and that the only reason that could be is that there's something new and more enveloping that's happening in our world, that these kids are developing something, and not just autism, but, you know, you've got learning disabilities, and you've got asthma, and you've got the diabetes, and juvenile diabetes, arthritis. I mean, it just goes on and on. And I think that the momentum to get to the bottom of this is becoming unstoppable. I think the Combating Autism Bill was something that a lot of people in Congress didn't want to do, but they basically got pushed by parents and by, the realization that they've got to get a grip on this, because we have a whole generation here that is, I think, under siege from something or some things, and we need to stop it for our own sakes and for their sakes.
Dan, remind folks how they can read your work.
They can go to upi.com and type in The Age of Autism, and it'll come up. I think some of it has gotten out on the web as well, and I'm happy to, you know, get people access to it if they get in touch with me, and I'm at dolmsted, O-L-M-S-T-E-D, at upi.com.
Dan, again, thank you, my friend, for all the work that you have done over the years, your doggedness and not willing to give up, and the late nights and the time on the road away from your family. Families like mine, countless families like mine, appreciate the work that you have done, and I just don't have sufficient words to say thank you for your professionalism and the unending energy that you dedicate towards this story.
Well, remember, I get paid for it, and as I've said before, I think that the local media, like your program and the alternative media, are where this story is continuing to unfold, and pretty soon the big shots will catch up, and we look forward to that.
Dan Olmsted, senior editor at UPI, one of the nation's leading investigative journalists covering the autism epidemic. You can read his work at upi.com. The Age of Autism is the series. Dan, thank you so much, my friend.
My pleasure.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com. Sean Tubbs, who's the producer and editor of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, has recently set aside an entire page to track the autism interviews, autism stories and interviews that we do on this program, so that they are all coalesced there in one aggregator on one page. And you can find it there on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Just over on the left, click on Autism. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.